ESPN College Football Podcast, hosted by Joey Galloway and Kevin Negandhi.
And welcome to the College Football Podcast. It is Thursday, October 28th. Kevin Negandhi here with you. Joey Galloway is going to join us in a few minutes with his breakdown of the Big Ten East, what he's looking forward to, as well as his Week 9 picks, as I had a very good weekend, and I make some ground with Joey overall. Also, Adam Rittenberg, our college football insider, joins us as we empty the notebook. And he has a phenomenal story about how ADs around college football are tapping into Ted Lasso and how that's playing a role now in coaching searches. I can't wait for him to share that with you. He also takes a closer look at the transfer portal and how it's worked for Mel Tucker and why it's worked for that entire program and turning the Spartans around heading into undefeated weekend for them against Michigan. We're also excited about our new weekday studio show, NBA Today, hosted by Malika Andrews. It's been fantastic. Alongside Malika, a full cast of NBA experts and insiders, including Kendrick Perkins, Shanae Agumake, Vince Carter, Zach Lowe, Woj, Ramona Shelburne, and many of our NBA reporters from around the league. Love watching it. Get caught up with the latest from around the NBA on NBA Today. That is 3 Eastern, noon Pacific on ESPN and the ESPN app. One app, one tap. You can also listen to NBA Today wherever you get your podcasts. Also, for all your fantasy football needs, don't sleep on the fantasy-focused football. 5 days a week streaming on ESPN Plus and available wherever you listen to your podcasts. Right now, enjoy Joey Galloway. As he does every single Thursday, Joey Galloway joining us here on the College Football Podcast. We will get to the picks in a moment. And of course, leading off with the Big Ten East. We've been waiting for this. We had October 30th circled for a long time, I think, as the season was progressing. When you look at how this shapes up, how big of a weekend is this in your mind, Joey? Or are we just saying, hey, it's a big weekend because of the matchups on paper? But do you think this weekend will have a lasting effect when we get deep into the playoff conversation in late November?
I think that it starts to just separate things. When you had 4 teams in the Big Ten East in that top 10, Penn State decided to bow out with a terrible loss to Illinois. But, you know, as we're waiting for things to sort of sort themselves out, as Tuesday is coming when we have our first college football rankings, some of these things start to just sort themselves out. I love the way the Big Ten East is set up right now with being probably the best conference in college football. But all the teams have to play each other. I love the way the Big 12 is set up right now with Oklahoma still having to play Baylor and Oklahoma State and Iowa State. And so this season is set up like, hey, relax. This is all going to sort itself out for us and become much clearer in the next few weeks.
Okay. When you say sorting itself out, there's one thing I think that stands out is the group of 5 elephant in the room. That is Cincinnati, right? Because you talk about conference play. Everybody can figure things out. And then Cincinnati, you know, every single week they're bringing it and they just get by a 1-win Navy team by 7 points. With next week's rankings coming up, they've got Tulane this weekend. How much do you think that's going to play a role? Like that they have to beat Tulane by, you know, 30 points after just beating Navy by 7 in where this initial ranking comes out in the conversation? Because in the general poll, the AP poll, they're number 2, but you know how things can get a little bit different with the 12 people in the room and how they view things.
Yeah, and I think that that's something we'll have to figure out because each time that the room changes, things that matter to people in the room also change. So I know in our world, we talk about how big a team wins. Do they look impressive while they're doing it? I don't react as much as most of the guys I work with to a close game. To a team blowing out, an opponent that wasn't very good. Like, I don't, like, make a move week by week. So I was sort of like, it takes me a little bit of time to phase into. So Cincinnati can beat Navy by 7 points, and I don't get like, oh, well, we got to move them down. I don't do that. Mm-hmm. This is college football. These are 18 to 19, 20-year-old kids. that someone has to motivate to get up to play every single week. And along that run, you're going to have a game where you go up against a team that shows up and it's going to be tougher than you think. It wasn't like Cincinnati was in danger of losing. They weren't in a Oklahoma situation.
Yes.
Oklahoma was actually losing and took a couple ridiculous plays to win.
Mm-hmm.
Cincinnati wasn't in that situation. They won the football game. It just wasn't as pretty as most people would like. So that doesn't bother me. But we'll see Tuesday night how the committee feels about it.
I will say this specifically about those two teams you just mentioned. If you're going to judge Cincinnati on how they played against Navy, you better judge Oklahoma on how they played Kansas. The difference for Oklahoma is what you mentioned at the beginning of this podcast, who they have the rest of the way, right? Schedule-wise. Cincinnati just doesn't have that benefit. I mean, they've got SMU later in the season. They just don't have the benefit of Oklahoma's schedule to keep on proving it each and every week. So we'll see how a Tuesday night will be really interesting with the initial rankings. Again, we're not going to panic. I'm just most curious to see where Cincinnati is on the first ranking release. All right, let's get to the games. All right, let's start with the Big Ten East. And, last week I would have had Penn State, Ohio State on the board on our picks. We're not even going to do that because just the way the uncertainty with Penn State's offense, we have no idea with Sean Clifford, how really bad that they looked with Clifford not even 100% against Illinois. So Ohio State, the way they've been playing offensively, I'm actually more fearful about Ohio State down the road if they're not going to get tested enough before the end of the season against Michigan and Michigan State with that defense. So let's just start out the gate, Michigan, Michigan State. But before we get to that, Taylor, let's recap this past weekend. How'd we do?
You guys, Kevin, I have some unfortunate news for you breaking right now. I was a little under the weather yesterday, and I don't think I calculated this correctly. You still won the week. You went 6-2, but Joey actually, he went 5-3, not the 4-4 that I originally gamed out here. And what really is killing you is Joey is bullying you into picking Temple or picking this Temple game. So
off the board.
I think it's in your best interest if you don't do that anymore. You got to stay strong, but you were the winner, 6-2, Joey 5-3.
Temple's off the board from here on out. And Joey, I don't appreciate you coming in here and asking Taylor to do a recount. I don't appreciate that.
Hey, Taylor, it's not like Kev is choosing Temple. He chose Temple long ago. They belong to him. He's not making a choice. It's automatic that he has Temple.
You went to Ohio State, but Ohio State's not on the board this week. Temple's not on the board this week. We don't need to make this about Temple.
You guys, I got a good idea.
Taylor has Maryland.
What if we're picking Ohio State? We have to pick Temple, but if we're not picking Ohio State, then no Temple. So
we won't pick Ohio State. They're tied together.
That's great. Let's do both.
No.
I have Ohio State and UCF.
No, we're not doing it. People that are listening to this podcast want to move on. They want to hear our picks. They don't want to focus on that stuff. Let's move on. I pick up a game on you. And that makes me feel good heading into this week. As I went 6-2, you went 5-3. I'm gonna circle back with Taylor because he had me for the last 24 hours feeling that you went 4-2
He had 4-4, and I noticed, Kev, how you showed up late today, as if you wanted to make a grand entrance into this podcast because you won the picks. You show up late like you're an L.A. Laker fan.
It's my time. I won the pod picks. It's my time this week, Joey.
You
go on my time.
Okay.
All right. Number 6, Michigan. On the road, favored by 4 at number 8, Michigan State. Joey?
I like Michigan State here. I know that both teams have to run the ball. I get it. I think if the quarterback matchup comes into play, if somebody can't run, I just think that Peyton Thorne is a little bit better than Cade McNamara and the ability to go downfield with the ball. So I'm going to go ahead and take Michigan State.
Oh, man. And the 4 is the number here because this feels like a 2.5 type of play. Like it's coming down to a field goal.
This game might be 6-5 by the end.
Yeah. You're 100% right. And especially at Michigan State, the one thing that concerns me if I'm Michigan State is that offensive line against Aiden Hutchinson. And can they run the ball consistently? I know Michigan State's going to focus on one thing, shutting down the run against Michigan, right? Let Cade McNamara beat you. Like you said, you give Peyton Thorne the advantage when it comes to the quarterbacks. Ooh, man, I have not really, I was not expecting you to take Michigan State. So I will take Michigan State.
Here's what I've learned. When you give one of those long, drawn out answers, you literally are trying to talk yourself into the pick while you're talking. Like you don't have
a game plan. You're correct. Because last week, what was the one, we lost with the Temple thing. What was the one thing I lost on? I lost on Purdue, and I was on the fence, right? I was hanging on that fence and it burned me.
One of the best moments I've had in a while in this industry, Kev, was that Purdue pick by you. I watched that video 10 times and laughed all 10 times. That was good.
You're not right. All right, let's stay in the Big Ten. Let's go. Number 9, Iowa at Wisconsin. And Wisconsin's favored by 3.5. And Wisconsin right now, I don't even know what to make of them. But their defense is consistent. Number 1 against the run. Number 2 in total defense. Jim Leonard's done a phenomenal job. And I don't know what to expect with Iowa. Because the way Wisconsin, we can guarantee one thing with Wisconsin. That's the strength of them. And that's their defense. Iowa, their offense can't be counted on. One thing Iowa does is create turnovers. And Wisconsin commits a ton of turnovers. So I am taking Iowa and the points.
I'm going to take Iowa also. Can we have a time clock on the answer, please? Taylor, can you like turn up a sin? What are those things called? Can we flip that when Kev starts talking? Because
you're wasting more time complaining right now than you are talking about picks.
Here we go.
All right. Next one. Texas at number 16, Baylor. Bears favored by 3. Who you got?
You know what? I would really like to go Texas here, but I don't. Texas can either be really good offensively and really bad on the defensive side, or be okay offensively, but still really bad on the defensive side. I'm just going to go with Baylor simply because I like what Dave Aranda has done there. And I think that Baylor is a team that is feeling confident right now. And I'm not quite sure what their mindset of Texas is. So here's your chance to go Texas, Kev, and get some separation.
We are really boring so far, America. I'm going with Baylor as well. And because I can count on their offense and Dave Aranda, keep an eye on his name, a hot name when it comes to the coaching searches at USC and LSU. He's one of those guys. He keeps winning. He's building a phenomenal resume. All right. ACC, Miami at number 17, Pitt. Pitt's favored by 9, coming off that emotional victory against Clemson. And Miami's got a little buzz there at the quarterback position. Kenny Pickett's been fantastic for Pitt. I'm going to take Miami. I think Pitt will win the game. It's just that the emotional win against Clemson, it's not going to be a double-digit victory. So I'm taking Miami in the points.
I appreciate that, Kev. I don't think the emotional win against Clemson was that emotional. I think Pitt actually went into a Clemson game expecting to win. And they played like they expected to win. It wasn't like this huge upset of the past. And I like where Pitt is right now. And I think that Pitt is a team that is going to play an ACC championship game. So I like Pitt in this game. And I think they're going to continue offensively what they're doing and continue sacking the quarterback.
I appreciate that, Joey. All right, let's go to the SEC now. Number 10, Ole Miss as a dog at the unknown. Then in the unknown is Bo Nix and number 18, Auburn. Auburn favored by 2.5. Who you got?
I'm going to go Ole Miss here. I think Ole Miss is one of those teams that if they continue to win, you know what I mean? Like that's a really good football team. It's just, you just never know where to go with Ole Miss because every game seems interesting, except the last one. But for the most part, their games just seem like if you want a close game, it's going to come down to some trick plays here and there, some crazy stuff happening. That's Ole Miss. We know Bo Nix to be Bo Nix. We're going to get like some playground football, some runaround stuff. If he can complete some, it'll be good. If he doesn't, it'll be awful. I like Ole Miss.
Bo Nix is a different quarterback, Jordan Hare, compared to being on the road. And that's the only reason why I would think that they're favored by 2.5. He's just a different quarterback. I trust, though, the best play caller in the SEC, and that is Lane Kiffin. So I'm going with Ole Miss as well, because you're getting the points. And I know one thing, that Ole Miss can put up points. If they just get a few stops in that game, they win. All right. North Carolina at number 11, Notre Dame. Notre Dame laying 3.5. The Irish in this game without star safety Kyle Hamilton. He's out with the knee. That's a top 5 projected NFL pick. This feels like it's going to be the Sam Howell show, because all Notre Dame could do one thing. They could stop the run. I don't know if North Carolina can run. As a result, I'm going with Notre Dame. I'm going with Notre Dame. 3.5.
There it is. 3.5. There he is. Hey, Kev, I watch you on TV a lot, and I don't ever see this many choke ups, like something getting stuck in your throat.
No,
as I do when it's time to make picks. You're amazing on TV, and then you got to make picks. And it's like, I'm gonna go Notre Dame here. This is sort of personal for me, because I've picked Carolina a couple times in my virtual locks, and I've lost both of those times. So I can never pick Carolina again for the rest of this season. Sorry.
Done. You're going against Carolina no matter who they play.
Hey, Kev, you know how it is. When you pick it's like you and Temple right now. You don't want to pick Temple. You dislike Temple. That's where I am with North Carolina right now.
Don't put words in my mouth. I don't dislike Temple. You know, I love that school. Stop. They're off the board. They're off the board. They're not doing our picks. People, America doesn't care who we pick with that.
That's how I feel about Carolina. They're off the board.
By the way, Carolina can play a big time spoiler in the next month. They've got Wake on the schedule. They got Pitt on the schedule. They can't consistently run the football. Our last game.
For the Wake Carolina game, when we get there, let's pick the over under. It might it might be 115.
I'm with you on that. We're doing that. We're gonna look at the over on that one. No doubt about it. All right, our last game is go to the American. Really good matchup there. Number 19 SMU at Houston. The line is even. Houston is led by their defense. I mean, they lost the opener against Texas Tech, and they've won 6 straight. And then you got SMU, and their total offense is number 6 in the country. Tanner Mordecai is playing really, really good ball. I'm going with SMU here.
I like SMU also. And this is one of those situations that is unfortunate for like a Cincinnati. Let's say Houston knocks off SMU. You know what I mean? Like, again, it's one of those situations we look at. It's like, where can Cincinnati get a win? Everyone keeps their eye on SMU. But if SMU loses, we'll automatically turn to Cincinnati and be like, oh, there went your chance. Like,
yeah, you're right. That's actually a good point. Now, we could see a repeat, though, hypothetically, if SMU were to win and then Cincinnati beats them in the regular season. They may place SMU again, I think, in the American. I think that's how it would go.
I thought the American was split.
No, it's not a split when it comes to divisions. So the scenario is easy if you look at it, where this weekend, if Houston beats SMU, Cincinnati plays SMU on the regular season schedule, and then potentially Houston at the end of the season in the American Championship game if everything goes according to plan. If SMU wins this weekend, they'll likely play, that is Cincinnati, SMU twice. That is once in the regular season and then once in the championship game. So it's Cincinnati could be in a can't win situation here specifically, right? When you have that Houston beating SMU plays a scenario like you just talked about. SMU beating Houston plays a scenario that they would probably potentially play SMU twice. Like,
exactly.
It crushes Cincinnati regardless with the optics.
Yeah, Cincinnati would be hoping for some crazy to happen in the Big Ten East and some crazy to happen. Like if a round robin of losses happens in the Big Ten East and in the Big 12, obviously it helps Cincinnati because their schedule is terrible. But go back to the pick, Kev. Who we got? SMU and
we Houston. Both go with SMU, right? I got SMU. Who do you got?
Yeah, we're going SMU.
Man, we are boring. So yeah, this the only. Is terrible.
But
no, no, that awkward.
I got UCF and Ohio State.
No, here's the crazy thing, Taylor. He could care less. He's never looked at a Temple schedule in his life, and this podcast has made him look at Temple week by week, off the board.
Hey, I'm telling you, Kev, I tried to take UCF in my virtual locks this week, and I couldn't even push that across the board to Stephen Oling. Even he said, no, that is off the board. We're not doing that.
Steve Oling is a fantastic producer at ESPN who deals with Joey every single week, so he needs a medal. There is no doubt about it.
Temple was off the board for him, too.
I appreciate that, Joey. I appreciate that. Hey, I'll see you over the weekend. Be good.
Sounds good, Kev.
It's time to empty the notebook on the ESPN College Football Podcast.
Do it every Thursday. We bring in one of our college football insiders and reporters to break down what they have collected when it comes to the information over the last couple of weeks leading into big matchups and storylines. And it's always great to have Adam Rittenberg joining us of ESPN.com, a college football insider and reporter. So, Adam, you know, when we look at the Big Ten schedule, this has been the week many people have circled to say we're going to sort some stuff out. And what stands out to me is, you know, Michigan State and Mel Tucker from a year ago, year number one in a pandemic, just getting a couple wins. And you're like, what is the identity of this team? Well, we found out the identity is Mel Tucker is the most successful coach in all of college football when it comes to the transfer portal. I had him on SportsCenter yesterday and I was talking to him about that. And I just said transfer portal and he started smiling. Like, and we went on a little bit about it, but it just stood out to me because this is all about transition. You can't guarantee success for the player. You can't guarantee success for the program. Yet he has nailed it each and every time. What have you learned about this process for him and his staff?
Right. Well, as you know, it's a reality for every coach and every program. It just depends on how they want to use it and how deep they want to dive into the portal. And you know, after that season last year where they went 2-5 and really were blown out in most of those losses, you know, Mel realized they had to get more talent. They had to get more players who had the capability of elevating an individual position or even a position group. And, you know, I went out there to talk with him last week in East Lansing, and he told me about his NFL background and how that really helped him with the portal specifically, and how Michigan State, Kevin, looks at the transfer portal like free agency. And Mel's point to me about free agency is you don't just grab in free agency. You actually target what you need, specific need was his quote. And then you see who matches up with what you do schematically. And that was their approach, even though they added a lot of players, 15 FBS transfers. These were targeted guys that they felt could help their program and obviously help those guys. And obviously Kenneth Walker, the third at running back. They have two cornerbacks who are starting who came from SEC programs. They have a linebacker Crouch from Tennessee. They have their left tackle is from Arkansas State. So they did a really good job of just evaluating what they needed and then looked at the portal like free agency. He's been through 10 free agent cycles in the NFL. And so he looks at the portal as free agency, high school recruiting as the draft, and that division really helped them figure out how to flip their roster.
It's a great approach. It's embracing it, right? There are some coaches who just can't stand it and just get really annoyed and mad. You've got to embrace it because, like you said, it's not going anywhere and has paid off, no doubt, heading into a game where they're undefeated and Michigan's undefeated in East Lansing. Cannot wait for the matchup. The other big Big Ten matchup in the East where we were kind of circling and unfortunately kind of lost a little luster with Penn State's offense being so anemic after the Sean Clifford injury against Iowa, and they haven't been on track. Clifford clearly does not look like he's 100%. Now they get ready to face an Ohio State team that is clicking on all cylinders. We knew the offense would be good just because they have just too many star players and CJ Stroud getting comfortable. What we've seen, though, is this defense take a turn here. And Matt Barnes, since he took over in September with the play calling, They have looked really, really good. What have you noticed when you talk to Matt specifically about the adjustments they've made? Because you can't hit the transfer portal in the middle of the season. No. You've got to now just deal with what you have on your roster.
Right. Well, I talked to Matt on Tuesday night, and he said, you know, first of all, the responsibility for the failures early on the season lies with everyone on that staff, not just Kerry Coombs, who essentially lost the play calling to Matt. So everybody had to look in the mirror and figure out how do we fix this? And you know, Matt's thing was, listen, you can look at players, you can look at scheme, and you can look at how you implement scheme. And it was very clear early on that it was not a personnel issue. They believe they have the best players in college football or some of the best collection. So they looked at their scheme and they tried to simplify it in a way that players could execute, especially some of the younger players at linebacker and in the secondary. They've maintained a healthy rotation. It was something I noticed in their opener, Kevin, covering them at Minnesota. They were rotating like crazy in the back end. They're still doing that. But these plays are simpler to execute, but they're also trickier for the offenses to figure out. So there's more disguise. There's more mystery in what Ohio State is showing. As Matt told me, we try to change the picture as much as we can for the opposing offense while still letting our players, you know, kind of get after it. And they're really leaning on their defensive line. And that's a problem because for Penn State, Ohio State, I think, has allowed less than 80 yards rushing now in four of their games. And Penn State cannot run the ball. I noticed this when I was at their win over Auburn, even though that was a great night for them. They couldn't run the ball against Auburn. Mm-hmm. And then lately, it's been the same type of story. I mean, Illinois, the running attack was anemic. And then with Clifford not 100%, that's why you score, what was it, 18 points in nine overtime. So they really need to get that running attack going. James Franklin is aware of it. He said it's an offensive line issue and being more physical. And then the running backs also have to take it upon themselves. So if Penn State can't run the ball, I don't see how they're even in this game. And then Ohio State has been really difficult to run against with some of their adjustments on defense.
Yeah, the offensive line has been a huge storyline here for Penn State. They have for multiple years. It's not just this year, and they haven't been able to consistently have a line where they could run the football. They've got talented backs. They bring them in, five stars from all over. They've recruited really well when it comes to that. They just cannot create holes for those backs, that line. We'll see how that plays out. Before we get to a Ted Lasso story, which I cannot wait for that, I do want to get your thoughts about Iowa and Wisconsin. These are two teams where it's just like, I can't figure them out. We were talking about this earlier with Joey Galloway. One thing I know for sure is Wisconsin's defense is fantastic. I thought Jim Leonard has a reliable unit week in and week out. We know what we're going to get. We have no idea what we're getting from Wisconsin's offense. The turnovers continue to build up. We have no idea what we're getting from Iowa's offense. When you get ready for a matchup like this, where Iowa's a top 10 team on the road and they're the underdog, what are your thoughts?
Right. Well, I think that's certainly going to motivate Iowa, especially coming off of a loss where they didn't play well at all offensively and they didn't generate the takeaways like they were accustomed to earlier in the season. I think if you're Paul Chryst and you're Wisconsin, you say, punt's a good play for us. Let's just not turn it over against these guys, because Purdue didn't do that. They weren't electric on offense other than David Bell, and they won that game handily. So they're playing at home. I think that's they ran the ball very well last week against Purdue in an impressive road win. And I think for Iowa, they have to figure out a way. Can they win without collecting three, four, five, what was it, seven takeaways against Maryland? Are they able to win games that way? They have a really good running back in Tyler Goodson. Like Penn State, they've had some issues along their offensive line other than Tyler Linderbaum, the All-America center. And then their quarterback play and the receiver play just isn't good enough. So can they get more? Both of these teams are looking for more out of their passing game, but especially Iowa, as poorly as Spencer Petras in that passing game looked against Purdue, can they find something against an even better Wisconsin defense? Otherwise, you know, their season, kind of like Penn State's, will start slipping away, and we'll be looking back at that, what was it, 3-4 matchup as sort of a kind of a fraud game. So this is huge for Iowa. The winner of this game, I think, has a great chance to win the West Division, to go to Indianapolis. And for Iowa, they really should have been back, Kevin, since the 2015 season. They have an outstanding record since then, but they have just lost the wrong games and not gotten back to Indianapolis. So very interested to see what they can do, especially if Wisconsin takes care of the ball.
It's wild that you bring up that Wisconsin's, you know, has to view the punt as an ally, because that's how Iowa views things. Right? Let's just punt field position and then wait till they make a mistake. And Wisconsin's made plenty of mistakes this season with the 17 turnovers. They've got to protect the football because Iowa will capitalize on the short field. So we will see how that plays out. All right, let's get to Ted Lasso. I'm a huge Ted Lasso guy. We've got to get Taylor up to speed on Ted Lasso. Eventually he will after baseball season. I know you follow that series as well. What have you learned, and how does Ted Lasso play a role in college athletics right now?
Right. So yeah, I cover the college coaching carousel closely, and, you know, talk to agents and others around the sport about, you know, what are the trends? And one thing that somebody told me earlier this season in talking to a lot of administrators is that these guys love Ted Lasso, just like you do, Kevin, and they want those qualities in the coaches that they're looking for. And there actually is a group of coaches that kind of reflect the Ted Lasso-ish approach. Jamie Chadwell, who's been very successful at Coastal Carolina. Now, he hasn't watched it yet. He told me he's going to binge watch it on their next road trip to Georgia Southern. Will Healy at Charlotte does the club lit and the dancing in the locker room. He says his dance moves aren't quite at Ted Lasso's level, but the next time they win a game, he's going to copy some of them. So the coaches, some of the coaches are into it. The ADs are really into it. And there is a reason beyond just the fun stuff. They believe that approach connects better with the modern day college athlete who's dealing with mental health issues, you know, the social justice issues, the NIL. There's a lot on that, on the athlete's plate, and the old school coaching approach just doesn't, in their minds, it's not as effective in terms of getting that athlete to perform. So I think this will continue to be a trend. You know, Dabo Swinney, I talked about this with Will Healy. Will Healy, he may have been the first Lasso in some ways. Mm. And the success of what he's done, maybe in contrast to some of the other coaches who have won championships, I think has changed the outlook of some of these ADs who love that show and certainly are looking for those qualities in the market.
It also helps for Dabo to get 5-star guys. And a lot of those guys don't transfer out, right? They don't hit the portal. Many, many of those guys, the retention there at Clemson is high. It is funny, though. This is based on a character that left coaching football at Kansas to go across the pond to teach soccer, and he doesn't have any idea. Now, ADs want to have a college coach like that. Yeah, in art, Kansas had that coach and they let him walk. It's just funny how that comes about. By the way, before I let you go, you talked about the coaching carousel. Have you heard any updates here? I mean, I know Mike Tomlin's no longer on the list when it comes to LSU and USC, but the one name I bring up is Dave Aranda. I mean, James Franklin, of course, the big news of switching agents now with Jimmy Sexton, that kind of like raised some eyebrows. Oh, wait, that's part of the conversation. What are you hearing right now when it comes to those two openings?
Right. Well, I was at the USC Notre Dame game last week in South Bend, spent a little bit of time with Mike Bone, the USC AD, before the game. He's not going to tell me who he's talking to, but I think they're certainly they're in their process, and they've been in their process for a while. I think Dave Aranda is an interesting option, just in the sense that there aren't very many other candidates for that job, Kevin, who have ties to Southern California. We've been talking about James Franklin. He's a PA guy. Matt Campbell, he's a Midwest guy. Luke Fickell, an Ohio guy. And so, you know, Dave Aranda is from the Inland Empire. He is from Southern California. And even though he hasn't been a head coach very long, he might be an interesting option. I do think Campbell's name is picking up some steam potentially in that search. And then we'll see with James Franklin. I really think that Illinois loss, you wonder how much that damaged his candidacy, especially if they go out and lose to Ohio State and lose to Michigan and or Michigan State. Are teams going to still have the same type of interest? But he's a guy who's certainly accomplished a lot at Penn State and might be on the list for both USC and LSU. Mel Tucker, another one. Yes. If he's able to continue the success, does LSU take a look at him? He was there with Nick Saban. When Nick Saban came from Michigan State that very first year, 2000, Mel Tucker was the defensive backs coach at LSU. He's worked under Saban, I think, at three different spots. He's been in the NFL, as I mentioned, and now having success at Michigan State. Does he leave so soon? Maybe not, but it's hard to turn down LSU.
And you bring up LSU, and obviously the elephant in the room is Jimbo Fisher and his latest contract, where there is no buyout. And the connection with the AD, what are you hearing about Jimbo's name being tossed around for the LSU job?
Right. You know, and Jimbo had a denial, maybe not as strongly as the one Mike Tomlin had. But I think he is very happy at Texas A&M. I also think I keep hearing from sources that Scott Woodward is going to make him say no over and over and over because of their connection, because it's LSU, a place that Jimbo really does love and a place where you've won national championships. I mean, A&M has given him everything he wants. The problem at A&M is that nobody wins a national title there. At LSU, everyone wins a national title, at least in recent memory. So that's a thing that coaches have a hard time looking past as they're assessing their future. But it wouldn't surprise me at all if Jimbo does follow through and stay at A&M. But I, you know, until that hire is made and Scott Woodward is standing up there introducing somebody else, we're going to still be talking about Jimbo Fisher and the LSU job.
And you're 100% accurate in all of that. One final thing about this. You brought up college coaches. Are you hearing anything about USC and LSU's interest of going outside the college circle and bringing in an NFL coach or even an NFL assistant?
You know, the hard thing, Kevin, is that the timeline for the hiring of NFL coaches is difficult, you know, mainly because the recruiting calendar has changed. And so many, most of the players sign in mid-December when the NFL season is still, 3 weeks away from wrapping up. So it would have to be somebody who really wants to get out. You know, Matt Rhule's name has come up at least externally. I know our colleague Reese Davis has brought him up as a possibility. He'd be a great hire for USC. He'd be a great hire if James Franklin leaves Penn State to go back to Penn State. But he is an NFL head coach, and that was always the goal. So I don't know if there's another NFL head coach that would be willing to make that move. There certainly are some assistants, but I don't think that USC can hire somebody who's never been a head coach before. They did that with Clay Helton. Didn't work out in the end. I think they need somebody who has a presence, who the players aren't Googling when they're meeting him for the first time. And so I think unless there's somebody that we're not thinking about maybe as a realistic candidate from the NFL, I'd be surprised if that's where they go.
And you bring up a fantastic point that I think plays a huge role in the last few years compared to previous years, that December recruiting period. That changes everything. And that may explain why we're seeing coaches getting fired in the middle of the season too, to ramp up what you want to do recruiting wise, because it just changes the entire philosophy. Would you agree that it's just the entire approach of when it comes to, you're not no longer saying you've got a month now, we just hired you, get ready for February signing period. Now it's December, and December has become a bigger day than what we see in February.
Every day counts with this recruiting calendar adjustment. And, you know, for example, there were a lot of coaches who used to be hired after championship weekend. If you do that, you know, you're only giving yourself a week or so, a week and a half to salvage a recruiting class. And now you should not, I always say this, ADs do not make a hire based on one recruiting class. If you want to wait a little bit longer for your guy, you absolutely should. But in the case of coaches who won't be making the playoff, you know, like a James Franklin, like a Luke Fickell, because he's still in it, but Matt Campbell, as soon as they're done with their regular season, I think some of these teams are going to pounce, and you're going to see some hires closer to December 1st to try to get them in place for maybe two full weeks of recruiting to try to do as well as you can with that, the majority of the class being signed in mid-December.
Adam, good stuff, man. We covered a lot here. Appreciate your time. Enjoy the weekend. Are you going anywhere, or is there a specific game you're going this weekend?
Yeah, I'll be in Columbus for Penn State, Ohio State. So, you know, hoping we get a competitive game. I'm not that optimistic, but maybe James Franklin's squad plays a lot better this week. We'll see.
Have fun there at the Shoe. Appreciate it. Thank you, buddy.
Thanks, brother.
Great stuff there from Adam as well as Joey. Big shout out to Taylor Schwenk on the other side, our fantastic producer. Before we go, there's a great game on ESPN Radio this weekend. Wisconsin and Iowa. Let's hope it's not going to be a bunch of punts in field position. Tune in at 11 a.m. Eastern time. The ESPN College Football Podcast will be back once again on Sunday with Paul Feinbaum and Matt Barry. Those guys will be recapping the weekend. Don't miss it and enjoy week 9. Talk to you next week.